well.
You're listening to CJLO News. Two nights in a row of protest and celebration as members of Montreal's Arabic community and others celebrate the ceasefire announcements coming out of the Middle East. On January 15th, it was announced that a ceasefire deal was being negotiated between Israel and Hamas, which could see the end of a war that over the last 15 months has seen a massive amount of casualties and the displacement of 90% of the Palestinians living in Gaza. The ceasefire deal would see the release of Israeli hostages captured by Hamas on the October 7th attacks of 2023, and the releasing of many Palestinian prisoners, and 42 days of negotiation on next steps. The very night of that announcement, people gathered outside of the U.S. Embassy downtown Montreal, waving flags, setting off fireworks, chanting, and celebrating the possible end of the war. The tone was celebratory, with families hugging, dancing, drumming, and snacking on free food and hot chocolate. The next evening, on January 16th, another gathering took place at the embassy, with a march through the streets of downtown to the Consulate General of Israel. This march had a more political tone and a diverse range of participants. CJLO was on the ground speaking with different attendees. This is the voice of Rabbi Stern, a Hasidic Jewish man who was there celebrating the ceasefire with a group of about six other Hasidim.
God tell us not to kill and not to steal, and we come out to show for the world, and it's not the name of all Jews, and not in the name of the Almighty, in the name of the Bible and the Torah.
There was also a number of doctors present at the event representing the advocacy group Doctors Against Genocide Quebec. As part of the ceasefire negotiations, it is expected there will be a surge of humanitarian aid flowing into Gaza. This doctor, Sophie Zhang, spoke about the importance of medical assistance as things change should this war end.
I think they're going to be needing a lot of help as well in the future, rebuilding. I think that a lot of healthcare workers abroad can help with that, either from a distance, like already some initiatives have started where we've been, because the medical students in Gaza have not been able to go to classes, have, you know, the curriculum is completely suspended. So they've actually been tutored by doctors from abroad and things like that. So those are like really good initiatives. I think that maybe like a lot of doctors will have to go to Gaza also to help train this generation of Palestinian doctors that have gotten their classes suspended.
There were many Palestinians and Palestinian Canadians at both events. This is the voice of Camille, who grew up in Gaza on an olive plantation. He left 6 years ago, but his parents, sister, and much of his family remain in the war-torn area.
Once the ceasefire takes place, you realize that, what's next? You know, you start thinking about what's your next stage? What are you going to do? How are you going to relive your place, your home, your friends? Like, you want to bury your loved ones. You don't know. You honestly don't know what's next. But nevertheless, it's still hopeful. Thinking about what's next versus about being stuck in the moment, it's still hopeful. No matter how ugly, how brutal it is, it's something to look towards.
Camille says he plans on returning to Gaza as soon as he can.
Our olive groves were completely destroyed. So the first thing that when I talked to him, I called him on WhatsApp on video, and his smile was cheek to cheek. He's old. He's a doctor, but he was raised to be a farmer by his dad, who was a farmer. And the first thing he said is like, I'm going to replant all those olives. I'm just waiting for it.
The situation changes hourly coming out of the Middle East. Here in Montreal, gatherings of many different groups are hopeful to see an end to the violence. For the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Adam Minnis.
dread like Rasta. It was a buffalo soldier in the heart of America, stolen from Africa, brought to America, fighting an arrival, fighting for survival. And he was taken from Africa, brought to America, fighting an arrival, fighting for survival. Said he was a buffalo soldier, dread like a Rasta. Buffalo soldier in the heart of America.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Tommy John Show here on CJLO 1690 AM in Montreal. Hope everyone's having an amazing January the 20th. It is a bright but cold one here in Montreal. Crazy windy. Hope everyone's bundled up and nice and warm. What a week we had in the world of sports. What a week. Divisional round in the NFL. National championship tonight. Push for the playoffs in the NHL and the NBA start now. And big, big news in Major League Baseball. Just so much going on in the world of sports. It's crazy. Cannot wait to get through it here and over the next hour. And if you're new to the program, this is the Tommy John Show. Remember to follow us on Instagram, Twitter, or X, whatever it's called now. Facebook, you name it, the Tommy John Show is on it every Monday, 1 to 2 p.m. Eastern. And if you missed the show or parts of the show, it will be up on Instagram following the completion of the show. So appreciate you guys for listening, and let's get right into it. The National Football League had 8 teams left going into the weekend. We now have 4, the final 4 teams in the National Football League. The AFC and NFC Championship next weekend. Cannot wait for those games, but we had truly, truly some awesome games over the weekend. And the one problem I've had with the NFL, and I love the NFL, love football, my favorite, but the NFL this year, let's be honest, has struggled to find great games. I mean, you look at even last weekend, there was the Tampa Bay-Washington game. Besides that, that Rams game with the Vikings stunk. The Bills 31-7 over Denver. 22-10, the Packers lost to Philadelphia. Like, just these blowouts that are over after the first half, it's just terrible. Think about it. Last weekend, there was one good football game. Washington-Tampa Bay. The Steelers game stunk. Houston-the Chargers, that was a brutal second half. Just awful football games. And even the big one a few weeks ago between Detroit and Minnesota, Week 18, 31-9. The NFL in these big games have struggled to have a good matchup. It just, I don't know what it is. 34 million, 40 million, whatever the number. All these people watching, and usually they're left disappointed after a half. And the NFL don't care. They get the viewership. They get all the TV revenue. They do not care. But as a fan, you get hyped up for these games and you have a letdown like we had in week 18, like we had last weekend in the wild card round. This week, at least, finally, for the first time in a long time, we had a big matchup that lived up to the hype. We had the Chiefs-Texans game, I thought was an entertaining game, pretty stressful. That Sunday night game, the Saturday night game with Detroit, that was crazy entertaining. And the two games yesterday were phenomenal. So we'll get into it right now, but the NFL needed a weekend like that, and did they get a big, big, big weekend with those games? We start off with the two-time defending champs, the Kansas City Chiefs, 23-14. They take down the Houston Texans and advance to yet another AFC Championship game. Every year Mahomes has started as a quarterback, he has played in the AFC Championship game. This is 7 in a row. They are looking to get back to the Super Bowl. That will be a great matchup against the Buffalo Bills, who won yesterday 27-25 over the Baltimore Ravens. Josh Allen wasn't Superman. He just took care of the ball, trusted the run game, and that was enough. Lamar Jackson was shaky early in that ball game, had a bad interception to, was it Johnson? Then that fumble when they're about to score there to go up, that was a backbreaker, the one Von Miller picked up and ran. Pretty much what to the 20-yard line, and then a few plays later, Josh Allen runs it in. Those two plays, and I know Buffalo got nothing off that pick, was huge. Just because Baltimore were moving the ball, and then it just stalls the drive. And even on that interception drive, I think they got pinned back deep. So that was a bit of a game changer. It was. Those two turnovers were costly. Then the Mark Andrews fumble. You know, Baltimore's finally moving the ball. Derrick Henry's getting involved. The Justice Hill's getting involved. The run game, they're breaking down Buffalo. Lamar completes a great pass to Mark Andrews. He's trying to gain extra yards and the fumble. I think it was Bernard who forced it out. That was a backbreaker. They end up going up 8 there, which was the difference in the game. Lamar, credit, great drive. Had to go the whole field, score a touchdown, does that. And then the two-point conversion. Listen, Mark Andrews makes that play 99 times out of 100. He does. He is an all-world tight end. He was an all-pro a few years ago. I think he's been the 4 Pro Bowls. He's a fantastic football player. But he is going to have trouble leaving this one in the past. He's going to think about this game for a long, long time. Not to mention the drop he had right before the Lamar Jackson fumble in the second quarter. Like that, he was open. That was going to be at least a 9-10 yard gain. Get inside the red zone, drops that one, and then Lamar fumbled the next play. But credit Harbaugh after the game. He came out and said, "Hey, Mark, we wouldn't be here if it wasn't for Mark Andrews," which is true. He's had a fantastic career, and he just couldn't make the plays. And it happens, and it sucks for him, and it sucks for the Ravens, who really were the better team in the second half. I don't understand what Buffalo was doing. They just didn't want to turn the ball over, but they got the touchdown to go up 11 at the break. It was 21-10 at the break. They get the ball to start the second half, and I was thinking if Buffalo score here, this game's over. 28-10, and Baltimore has to abandon the run game and just throw it to who? Likely to Bateman. It was going to be a recipe for disaster. And for some reason, I've been a Joe Brady fan. I love what he did at LSU. I know he had the rough patch in Carolina, but he's done a great job with this Bills offense. The play calling was very, very conservative for the first two drives of that second half, which immediately put Baltimore back into the football game. Immediately. You had a chance to go up 28-10 or 24-10. Be aggressive. You have probably the MVP in the league in Josh Allen. Just go for it. Not saying throw 50-yard bombs, but you'd run, pass. Like that's not going to do anything. And I know they rushed well in the first half, but it was constantly like 3rd and 8, 3rd and 7. Josh make a play, and he would get 5 yards, and you have to punt. So I thought Buffalo were playing not to lose instead of playing to win in the third quarter. But credit them. When they needed a drive to get some points, they got it. They took off a lot of clock at the end of the game, took it under 4 minutes. Now, the real question that we're going to have is who is going to show up on defense for Buffalo? Yes, they only allowed 25 points against a very good offense, but that second half was not good. For Buffalo, it was the turnovers that saved them. That's big. The Lamar pick was big. The fumble by Jackson was monumental, and in the Mark Andrews fumble. So they made plays. But when you play Kansas City next week, you cannot have Kareem Hunt and Pacheco rip off 8-9 yards a run. That has to be the number one priority for Buffalo next weekend. Let Mahomes throw it, not to Kelce. That's the game plan. That really is the game plan. Kelce, for some reason, in the postseason, just he gets wide open. And he will quickly transition to Houston. Their defense was great for much of the afternoon. But if there was one criticism, it would be not covering Kelce. Or doubling Kelce. It was Kelce or bust in the pass game. It was run the ball with Hunt, run the ball Pacheco. Oh, okay, Kelce. And usually he was open. Look at these numbers. Kelce was 7 catches, 117 yards, and a touchdown, averaging over 16 yards a catch. Next was Xavier Worthy. He had 45 yards on 5 catches. Then it was Noah Gray, 3 catches, 13 yards. Kareem Hunt, 1 catch, 2 yards. That was it. Only 4 players caught a ball for the Chiefs on Saturday. 4. And it wasn't some unnamed player who just came off the bench and was torching you. No, it's arguably the greatest tight end in NFL history in Kelce, who is known to be Superman in the postseason. Maybe, I don't know what the game plan was. They just put so much pressure on I don't know what the game plan was. Would they just stop the run and then you just forget about Kelce? I don't know. But you saw clearly early in that first half is that they're looking for Kelce. They're looking for Kelce. And there was no adjustment made. And credit Houston, they played well. Stroud got sacked a billion times. They had that amazing drive to start the second half. And then they lost all the momentum after Fairbairn shanks an extra point. And he was a disaster. Disaster on Saturday. I know 55 yards, it's a long kick, but that wasn't even close. That wouldn't have been good from 30 yards. Shanked that one. Shanked the extra point. Gets the kick blocked when they're trying to make it a one-score game. Not to mention the opening play of the game. You can make an argument that special teams is the reason why the Texans lost this ball game. The opening kick, Kansas City runs 63 yards. Not to mention, Buddy takes his helmet off, shoves his coach, 15-yard penalty. The Chiefs are starting the game inside the Texans 20. They held them to 3. That's 3 points. Fairbairn makes that kick. That's 3 points for Houston. The two, another field goal that was blocked. The extra point. That is really the difference in the ball game. If the Texans get the 2 field goals, that's 6 points. Plus the extra point, they're at 21 points. Maybe 19 points because the safety wouldn't happen, but you get what I'm trying to say. And then you take the 3 off the board that Kansas City got on that opening drive, and that's the difference in the game. And Houston, I was not buying them going into the postseason. Sure, I love them coming into the year. Tank Dell, Diggs, Nico Collins, they bring in Mixon. CJ Stroud was amazing as a rookie. They started off great. Were they like 6-1 or 5-1? Forget, they started off great. Then they completely tailed off, and then no one liked them against the Chargers a week ago. They win that game, look impressive, and then they play the Chiefs tough once again. And credit them, they're going to be around for a long time. They're well coached, but they got to do something about their special teams. Get Fairbairn the hell out of there. Get a real special teams coach, and you got someone cooking. And they have to fix that offensive line. I know Chris Jones is great, and was Karloftis and all these guys. I get it. It's a great, great front. But come on. Can you chip Chris Jones? Can you bring an extra lineman in, bring the fullback in, do something? There's just no adjustments on the offensive line. Absolutely none. And that cost Houston big time. Big time. Special teams in the offensive line. You get that fixed, Houston, you got a real, real good football team. And then obviously Diggs is going to be healthy. We'll see if they bring him back. I don't know when Tank Dell is going to come back. But I think Mechie's a good young player. And Nico Collins is a number one receiver. So I am not concerned about the Texans in the long run. I think they're going to be fine. Kansas City, though, listen, they're in the AFC Championship every year. It's the Mahomes and Reed Invitational. We understand that. I think they were rooting for Baltimore. I could be wrong, but Josh Allen is the one quarterback who really plays to Mahomes' level in these games. I thought last year it was a pick'em between who was better. I thought Allen was tremendous last year in Buffalo. If Diggs caught that ball, we're having a different story. If Bass makes a 40-yard kick, it's a different story. And then obviously the 13 seconds game, that was, they were essentially the same. It was touchdown for touchdown. And the one, whoever won the coin toss is going to win the game. Kansas City wins the coin toss, they win the game. So in these big games, when Allen's gone against Mahomes, he has played just as well, if not better, in some case scenarios. And in the regular season, the Bills have won four straight against the Chiefs. So they have the confidence of, we can play with this team. We can. And not just at home. We've gone in the Arrowhead in the regular season, what, twice, three times and beat them? So we're not scared. The Bills will not be scared. The question is, can they stop the run? And can they cover Travis Kelce? If I'm McDermott, I don't care. Double him. If Xavier Worthy and Juju Smith-Schuster and Hollywood Brown beat you, so be it. But you cannot, for the love of God, let Travis Kelce get 10 catches, a buck 40, two touchdowns, and you lose the game. That cannot happen. How many times are teams just going to let Kelce run into space? And it's a credit to him. He just finds ways to get open. And it seems like, I heard a good analogy over the weekend. It's Travis Kelce at this point of his career is like the old car you have in the garage, the old Ferrari, the old Porsche, whatever, and you have the cover over it. You don't touch him throughout the year, but then finally when the weather's nice and you want to take it out, that thing drives superbly. That's Travis Kelce. The entire regular season now at his age, he's in his mid-30s, covered up, we'll use him a bit, nah, not really. And then come postseason time, they take the cover off the car, they open the garage, it's a nice sunny day, we're going to go on Lakeshore, we're going to drive, and let that beautiful car run. And that's what Travis Kelce is at this point of his career. Can he do it for 17 games in the regular season, a buck 10, a buck 30, couple touchdowns, 7 to 10 catches? Probably not. Probably not. But come postseason time, and we saw this last year too. This is not like, oh, well, Kelce, the first good game. No. Kelce in the postseason, even last year when he had a down regular season, is superb in the playoffs. He was great against Miami. I thought his best game was against Baltimore. Again, that AFC Championship game, I thought he was terrific in that game. Played well against Buffalo last year. Had a few big catches in the Super Bowl. Postseason time, you're going to get a very good Travis Kelce, even at this age. He's still their number one threat. So the game plan for Buffalo has to be no ifs, ands, or buts. No. The game plan is make sure Kelce does not beat you and stop the run. If you can just average, if Kareem Hunt averages 3 yards a carry and Pacheco averages 3 yards a carry, you're fine. Just do not get him in the third and long. Kansas City loves to run the ball a few times. Then you get that third and two, third and three, and I know Kelce's open. We can do a nice little pitch pass to P. Ryan or Xavier Worthy on a jet sweep, and there's a whole bunch of ways they can get first downs from those short yardages. But if they can stop the run, force Mahomes to throw the ball down the field to an inexperienced receiver core, that is by far their best chance. And if there's one optimistic sign for Buffalo on Sunday night, if I can give them something to look forward to, is look how Joe Mixon, with a poor offensive line, ran against the Chiefs on Saturday. I thought he was terrific, Joe Mixon. There was a lot of times, yeah, he was met immediately, went down, but he had some good runs of 10, 12, 16 yards, and that touchdown play in the second half, the first drive of the second half, was awesome. He had 88 yards and a touchdown. He was averaging 5 yards a carry. That will work. Do that with James Cook, and the Bills have a far better offensive line. Far better offensive line than the Texans. And I love C.J. Stroud. The Bills have a far better quarterback right now at this point in their career. And I know there's no number one receiver. There's no Stephon Diggs there anymore. But this is a Bills offense that has not elite weapons, but they just have a bunch of solid NFL players. Shakir's a solid NFL slot receiver. Kincaid is a solid tight end. Mac Hollins is a solid receiver. Curtis Samuel's solid. Amari Cooper. We haven't seen much of him in the postseason. Maybe he has a big game. Keon Coleman's a rookie with a bunch of talent. There are players that can hurt Kansas City in this pass game. Not to mention the MVP of the league, probably. And they got three good running backs. Ray Davis, he was averaging like 7 yards a carry yesterday. Ray Davis was awesome. James Cook was sensational. Ty Johnson. Not to mention you have the threat of Josh Allen's legs as well. So if they can run the ball effectively and the defense can get some stops, then Buffalo has a chance. Absolutely. On the road. And the reason why I think Kansas City would have rathered Baltimore is there's just not as many threats on the outside, if I'm being honest, that I should fear. Isaiah Likely? He's a fine player. Mark Andrews? There's probably going to be no Zay Flowers, and if he was, he would be limited. What, Bateman? If they stop Derrick Henry and force Lamar to throw, I would love Kansas City in that game. I think Buffalo, for some reason, and it might be crazy, match up better with Kansas City. I've seen Josh Allen have immense success against Steve Spagnuolo's defense before. Look at what, November? Mid-November, that game in Buffalo, Josh Allen was terrific. They scored 30 points. They won by 2 scores. So that's going to be the game plan. Stop the run, get Kansas City into third and long, and cover Kelsey. Play one-on-one with the other receivers, but do not, for the love of God, let Travis Kelsey beat you. And on the offensive side, try and get the run game going and get that play action moving. And if Josh Allen can use his legs and extend plays, pick up first downs, then they got a great chance. This is, to me, the best chance the Bills have had to make the Super Bowl, by far. Kansas City, they're winning, but they're not winning pretty. There's no pressure to force a Stephon Diggs the ball, or he'll complain. This is just an offense that is well-balanced. They run the ball well. Josh Allen's great. They got great tight ends. Two good tight ends. Very good tight ends. And they got decent receivers on the outside. Shakir, Amari Cooper, Coleman. So if there was ever a chance for the Bills to make a Super Bowl, the first one since the 90s, to get past Mahomes, Reed, Kelsey, and the Chiefs, this is their chance. Will they do it? They're 2-point underdogs? I don't know. Saying they can and that they will are two different things. But if you're looking for an opportunity in the past, they've been outmatched at wide receiver, outmatched on the offensive line, their defense. Finally, they have a balanced offense and a good run-stopping defense. They have not had that for a long time, maybe ever in the Josh Allen era. Matchup-wise, this benefits Buffalo. But the real question is, can you stop Kelsey and can you stop the run? The other side of the NFL, we have the NFC, and that was an awesome, awesome NFC slate of games. You had the Lions, just a heartbreaking loss to Washington, 45-31. Jane Daniels is terrific. He's a great rookie quarterback, but that Lions defense was awful. It's an RPO screen to McLaurin. He goes 80 yards. 80 yards. Screen, a little wide receiver screen. There's three receivers there. The Lions only have two guys there. They block him easy and he's gone. Just pathetic. Then, maybe the worst part of the Lions game, fourth and what, two? Inside the 10-yard line? Dan Quinn, Commanders, probably going to go for it. They're lined up to go for it. And Aaron Glenn and Dan Campbell have 12 men lined up on defense. Before even Washington can run a play, there's a flag. Automatic first down. Just poor coaching, poor execution, and I've been a Jared Goff defender here on the show. I think he's a very good quarterback, but that was maybe the worst performance of his career. And I know he scored 3 points in a Super Bowl all those years ago with the Rams, but this performance was close. Third and one. This was the turning point in the game for me. Third and one. I believe it was third and one. It's 7-3 Detroit. They go empty backfield without Jahmyr Gibbs. By the way, Jahmyr Gibbs, as great as Jaden Daniels was playing, you can make an argument Jahmyr Gibbs was the best player on the field on Saturday. He was ripping 12 yards a carry almost. He was unstoppable. They drop back pass, strip sack. Washington gets the ball, and then they immediately go down and score to go up 10-7. If they just have Gibbs in the game, or even Montgomery, but I would have put Gibbs. He was dominating them. You get the first down there, score the touchdown. It's 14-3. And personally, that is a different ball game. Later on, they're feeling it a bit. They're down. Goff starts pushing the ball, throwing bad picks, throws the pick six, and gets probably concussed. That was a monster hit on Jared Goff. Then, obviously, at the end of the half, they're trying to get points. And then he forces a seam pass down the middle. The Williams gets picked. And Brady, I know people have come on him as a commentator. I thought that was very good analysis. He said, I don't have a problem with him throwing there, but he has to throw the ball towards the hash, not straight at him, to lead him toward away from the defender. And when I heard that, I'm like, that's a good analysis, Tom. So yes, Brady's not a great analyst right now, but I thought that was very insightful. He's getting much better. He is. Patriot haters will say no, he's getting much better. He was making observations. He called the 12 people on the field immediately. He said, oh, that's 12 men. He knew it right away. So you can see he sees it through the quarterback's lens. He's the greatest player in NFL history, greatest quarterback. He saw it immediately, and his analyst is getting much better. But for me, watching that game, and credit Brady because he saw it, he's like, it's not that Jared Goff's making the right decision. He's just throwing bad balls. He didn't really say that, but he's like, hey, that ball should be there. That's the right read, but nah. Like the Patrick throw. He's like, oh, I would have went to Patrick too, but he airmailed him by 20 yards. Jameson Williams, I like going for him there, but lead him towards the hash. Lead him towards the pylon. Don't throw it up the seam. So credit Brady. I thought he called a good game. He still had the moments of, oh, nice play. But he was pretty good. But Jaden Daniels was terrific. The whole Terry McLaurin's a stud. And you can make an argument that the Lions, I'm not trying to make any excuses for the Lions, but there was so much buzz around them. And one thing the NFL might have to fix is this interviewing process for head coaching jobs. Because, yes, the Lions had the bye week. They had 2 weeks to prepare. But throughout that whole time, I kept seeing Ben Johnson interviewing for a job. Aaron Glenn interviewing for a job. And not just one job. Aaron Glenn interviewed what? With the Saints, the Jets. Ben Johnson interviewed with the Patriots. He interviewed with the Raiders. Interviewed with the Bears. Interviewed with the Jaguars. So if you're constantly doing these 3-hour, 4-hour interviews for 5 teams, that takes a lot of time away from game planning, being with your offense, being with your quarterback, and it hurt them. It really did. I'm not trying to find excuses, but the NFL might have to do some things. It's the same in college football with the NIL and the transfer portal. It opens up before the season's done, so you might get a key backup who transfers when you're in playoff games. We saw that with Penn State. We saw that with SMU. Their backup quarterbacks just transfer before the college football playoff. Like, not like a month before. Like, days before the opening rounds. You have the Penn State quarterback transferred. Got out of there. I think he went to Missouri. I could be wrong. But anyway, he transfers. Gets out of Dodge. Because he knows I have to go and start somewhere. And Drew Aller or whoever is starting in front of me. I gotta leave. Same with head coaching. Mike Vrabel and the Patriots, that's different. He did not have a job. Or the team he was in, his last job was consulting with the Browns. The Browns eliminated, fine, interview him. And you can hire him. But if you want to interview a Ben Johnson, an Aaron Glenn, a Cliff Kingsbury, and credit Cliff Kingsbury of Washington, he said, I'm not interviewing until the season's over. We got a playoff run here. Ben Johnson, Aaron Glenn, they're taking a million interviews. And Aaron Glenn, if you want a head coaching job, that was not a great last performance. It wasn't. And coordinators who have gotten head coaching jobs have had bad last performances, most notably Dan Quinn with Dallas last year against Green Bay. What, they went for over 40 points, and he was taking interviews with Washington and New England and all these other teams who I think were interested. Maybe not New England, sorry. New Orleans before they let Allen go. It was like, they're out and about interviewing. when they should be focusing on the football. And that hurt them. I think it really did. Because sometimes, and then Ben Johnson, who's been just amazing all year, started getting too cute with the play calling, lateral this way, lateral that way. Let's have Jameson Williams throw a football in the triple coverage just for fun. He went too trick play centric. The whole point of a trick play is supposed to be a surprise. They keep doing a trick play over and over and over and over again. It's not a surprise. Defense is expecting something. And literally, it was like 100 trick plays. I'm like, damn, can we just run the ball, Jahmyr Gibbs? What are we doing here? Elite O-line, top three running back in the league, who is gashing Washington. No, trick play here, trick play there. Oh, my God. Jahmyr Gibbs had 14 carries, 105 yards, 2 touchdowns. He was averaging 8 yards a carry. Not to mention he caught 6 balls for 70 yards, so that's 12 yards a catch. He was destroying Washington. And they went away from it to do, gadget play, trick play. And that seemed like with Brady there calling the game, Brady wants him to coach the Raiders. Ben Johnson was trying to maybe put an audition on for Brady in person. Look at what I can do to the Raiders. Crazy. Credit Washington. They came in with nothing to lose. They played with nothing to lose. They went for it 4th downs constantly. The play calling was great. Jaden Daniels was terrific. McLaurin was awesome. Everyone showed up. They forced turnovers. And what a turnaround, if you think about it. They picked 2nd in the draft last year. They got the head coach right. They got the offensive coordinator right. Invested smartly in the offense, on the offensive line. And you drafted a franchise quarterback, and here you are. From 4 wins to the NFC Championship game in 1 year. And this should be a blueprint for teams like New England, teams like Tennessee, teams like the Giants. Hey, if you get the coach and quarterback right, you're going to be okay. As a Patriots fan, I'm like, hey, why don't we just do what Washington did? Hire a good offensive coordinator that fits Drake May's system. Now we got an elite coach in Vrabel. Make some smart signings, good draft. Away we go. We can turn this thing around. Washington is the blueprint. Draft a good quarterback, hire a good coach, and hire a good OC if it's a defensive coach. Like, it's hard to emulate what they're doing, like, to get everything right like they did, but that should be the blueprint. Young quarterback, surround him with good players, hire a good coach, a solid coach who's been around the block and have had success. Like, Dan Quinn, everyone talks about that Atlanta Super Bowl. Think about what he did. The Falcons weren't that good. He led them to a Super Bowl. Look what he did to the Seattle defense. Legion of Boom won a Super Bowl there. Look what he did to the Cowboys. The Cowboys defense wasn't the same this year without him. They were a great defense when Dan Quinn was the DC. Hence why he got the Washington job. And look what he has done with Washington. And he was no one's first pick. Washington wanted Ben Johnson. That's who they wanted last year, I believe. They end up getting Dan Quinn. And man, what a job he's done. He is a great defensive mind. He doesn't have an amazing players. Lattimore is a good player. But he doesn't have like amazing players in the defensive side of the ball. They just have players who make key stops and make key plays. And the scheme's great. Cliff Kingsbury, he's going to get another head coaching job. But I don't know if he is going to take one this cycle. I don't. I know the Bears are interested. You like to think Jacksonville, team with these young quarterbacks. But he's... was patient. He said, I'm only interviewing after the season's over. And the Lions, they were interviewing their OCs and DCs, and everyone was interviewing for jobs rather than game planning. So that was disappointing. And then the other game, we had the Rams. What a football game that was. The Rams, nowhere near as talented. Sean McVay almost pulls off one of the great wins of his career. But it comes down to it. Saquon Barkley was the difference. Something's wrong with Hurts. He can't throw for 140 yards again and expect to win a Super Bowl. But Saquon Barkley was the reason they won the game yesterday. They lose Mitchell early, the rookie corner stud. The defense made some stops. The turnovers, if they don't have the turnovers, the Rams there in that stretch, they probably win the game. The Kyron Williams turnover was a killer, and then the Stafford one the next drive was a killer. But Saquon Barkley had over 200 yards rushing. He is just a game changer. And he can flip any game like that. In the blink of an eye. When the Rams punted with 4 minutes left, I'm like, all right, you get a stop here and we'll move down and score. Saquon Barkley, first play, just ripped it. 70 yards. And credit the Rams, most teams just fold there. No. They got the ball back. Stafford went right down the field, scored a touchdown. Then questionable play calling by the Eagles, had the punt, and Stafford almost did it again. And honestly, after Nacua made that a remarkable catch on the sidelines, I thought the Rams were going to get it done. But the big play was at 3rd and 2. You probably could have ran the ball with Kyron Williams. At least guarantee a 4th and short. The center doesn't pick up Jalen Carter. Not like a backup linebacker. The best player on the damn field, Jalen Carter. Doesn't pick him up, rushes, sacks him. Then 4th and long, miscommunication. That's the ballgame. And Philadelphia, I don't know what to make of them yet. They're so talented. So talented. But I find in big spots, their coaching has been a bit iffy. Sirianni, Kellen Moore, Vic Fangio's been awesome as the DC, but Kellen Moore, he's been interviewing a lot with the Cowboys and other teams, but that some of that play calling late in the game, like rolling Jalen Hurts out to his left when he has a bum wheel, and there's no one open, and he throws the ball away, stops the clock, that's just brutal. Or he might have taken the sack. I took the sack. I don't remember. I think he took the sack. But still, then everyone knows you're running on 3rd down. It was just bad play calling. Bad play calling. And the Eagles, is just their talent prevailed. And they, trust me, have their hands full with Washington. These are two teams that know each other. Have already played twice this year. They split the series. I know Pickett got to play because Hurts was hurt in that game. I understand that. But Washington has zero pressure. They've gotten the NFC Championship game with a rookie quarterback, first-year head coach with a new team. They're playing with house money. All the pressure's on the Eagles. 5.5-point favorites, trying to get back to the Super Bowl. They have a 2,000-yard rusher. Sirianni's cocky. They have their star receiver reading novels on the sidelines. All the pressure's on the Eagles to get back to the Super Bowl. And that's why Washington is a very dangerous team. They are. They could be a live dog. They really could. We're going to get into a quick break. When we come back, we will talk about the games going into next weekend and preview the national championship tonight between Notre Dame and the Ohio State. We'll be right back after this quick word from our sponsors. Do not go away.
Maison presents Expo 88, a brand new 3-day music and arts festival happening at Maison in Montreal, January 23rd to the 25th, sponsored by CJLO 6090 AM. Kick things off Thursday, January 23rd, with Brad Barr of the Barr Brothers, Hank Stream, and Peter Lannan. Friday, January 24th, enjoy a night of indie from The Fake Friends, Sunray Minor, and Amaryllis. Saturday afternoon, January 25th, relax with ambient soundscapes curated by Patrick, visuals by VJ Ollie, and an interactive art exhibit in the gallery. Then wrap it all up Saturday night with Frown Line, Hearts of Palm, and Fleeting Colors. Festival and individual day passes are now available. Get your tickets and more details at Maison_MTL on Instagram. Don't miss Expo 88, January 23rd to the 25th at Maison.
Do you want to have a discussion about movies?
You have part of my attention. You have the minimum amount.
And half the iconic sounds of cinema? Well, tune in to At the Movies with Iconic Sounds every Tuesday mornings from 8 to 9 a.m. only on CJLO 1690 a.m. with your host, Remy.
Back here on the Tommy John Show. And quickly for you baseball fans, I know the Jays have been swinging and missing. Big signing today for the Blue Jays. They signed Anthony Santander from the Baltimore Orioles. 5-year deal, roughly $90 million, but he's played very well the last few years. I know his batting average was a bit down last year. But he had 44 homers, 102 RBIs last year. The year before that, 28 homers, 95 RBIs. Year before that, 33 and 89. And he's had the potential to be a decent hitter for average. But he's usually around that 260 mark, 255 mark. He is complete just hit or miss. He is home run or right back to the dugout. But the Jays, they swang and miss on Juan Soto. And then they, rumors they're in on Pete Alonso. We'll see. They miss out on the Japanese kid Sasaki. He obviously goes to the Dodgers. But credit them. They needed some bats. And they go get Santander, who will play in the outfield. But now the real thing for the Blue Jays is just sign Guerrero. Just enough of this. You were going to offer Juan Soto's, what, $700 million? $680? Why don't you just offer Guerrero the $450 he wants and get this over with? I'm serious. If you had money for Otani, and I know Otani pays for itself. Guerrero's a superstar in Canada. His dad played in Montreal, legend. Vladdy's been, what, in the MVP conversation a few years now. If you go to the Rogers Centre, everyone has a 27 jersey. He is a star in Toronto. To say he doesn't pay for himself is crazy. Crazy. I would absolutely sign. I don't know what they're doing. And he said, I'll play for the Red Sox. I'll play for the, like, what are we doing? I'll play for the Phillies. I'll go somewhere else. But he said he wants to stay a Blue Jay, but he wants his money. Just pay him. Especially, you think, after looking at their roster this year, like, are you serious? Like, they were so pathetic this year, the Blue Jays, and their one player who showed up and was box office when they were a million games out of the wild card was Vladdy Guerrero Jr. 30 home runs, 103 RBIs. He hit .323, and his OBP was .400 around. On a team that sucked. My God. He had 48 home runs, 111 RBIs a few years ago. The year after that, 32 home runs, 97 RBIs. And then last year, two years ago, considered a down year. He was 26 home runs, 94 RBIs. And then this year, when the team was so pathetic, he has over 100 RBIs again, 30 home runs, and he hit .323. Oh, and here's the best part, Toronto. He's in his early 20s. Like, what are we doing? He's a four-time All-Star already. Just awful. They have to sign him. They have to. Santander's a good pickup. Springer, he's not the same kind of player. They want the bat. All right. But still, they need to sign Guerrero. There's no way around it. If you're rebuilding and embracing the rebuild, okay. Trade him. Get some prospects. But you clearly want to win now. You wouldn't be signing Santander to $90 million deals. You wouldn't be in the Otani, the Soto, the Sasaki, Yamamoto sweepstakes. You wouldn't be doing it if you weren't trying to win now. Your best player wants to sign a long-term deal with you, and then, y'all, let's go to arbitration again. Just a disaster. Disaster. Good pickup, Santander, but now focus on extending Guerrero. That should be the number one and sole priority. Quickly, before we move to the national championship game, National Hockey League, Montreal, that was a bad loss on Saturday. They're up 3-0, and then just, I don't know what the hell that was after that. Toronto scored 7 straight, fair enough. They came back last night and were down, what, 4 times in the game, and they win in overtime 5-4 against the Rangers. And Dobesh, I know, not his best performance. Only faced 27 shots, allowed 4 goals, but the 2 saves he made in overtime, back-to-back, kept them in the game. And they might roll with Dobesh. Like, Montembeau, I think, is good goalie. But Dobesh is undefeated as a starter, and you know people in this city are going to start talking about it and make him the number one. If he just keeps winning games, it might happen. Montreal's got a big stretch coming up. They're playing much better as of late. They really would. If they held on to beat Toronto the other night, they're up 3-0. They would really be cruising. Really. They got a big stretch coming up. They got Tampa Bay tomorrow, then at Detroit, New Jersey, and then they got a tough stretch. They got Winnipeg and Minnesota next week, two of the best teams in the league. Then it softens up a bit. Anaheim stinks. San Jose stinks. So they got to take advantage of these next 5 games. They really have to. Play well against mid. They seem to play well against the good teams. They beat Dallas. They beat Washington. They beat Colorado. Beat Vegas. Beat Florida. Tampa. They play the good teams well. So if they can just continue that, ride the hot hand in Dobesh. I assume Montembeau will play tomorrow, but I could be wrong. But credit Montreal. They've really turned it around. Really have turned it around. We're going to get into one final break, and when we come back, we will talk about the national championship game tonight, and I'll also give a quick preview of the NFC and AFC championship games on Sunday. We only got four teams left, people. Four teams left, and we sadly only have three games left in the NFL season, which I can't believe. We wait all year for September, and then it's gone so fast. Gone so fast. So quick break, and when we come back, national championship preview and the conference championship game picks. Right after this here on the Tommy John Show. Do not go away.
Tavern Tour is back from February 6th to 8th. With more than 80 artists, the tour will blast through the bars and venues of Boulevard Mont Royal, Saint Laurent, and Saint Denis. Make sure to check out artists such as The Gorys, Billy Woods, The Sadies, Wombo, We Are Wolves, La Securité, Croy, Pax, Chandra, Charlotte Cornfield, Ralph Francis, Ada Lee, The Drin, Kaya Hoax, Alex Walton, Pryors, Gus Engelhorn, and many more. Check out taverntour.ca to get a look through the whole lineup and get your tickets online. Presentation from La Caisse des Jardins du Plateau Montréal.
For the best new music from around the globe, with a respectful nod to the musical pioneers of the past and a whole lot more, join me, Danny Payne, on The Pressure Drop every Monday at 5 on CGLO 1690 AM or CGLO.com.
If this world were mine.
Hey, Roman numeral 7, babe, drop it like it's hot. If this world was mine, I'd take your dreams and make them multiply. If this world was mine, I'd take your enemies in front of God. Introduce them to that light, hit them strictly with that fire. Fa, 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 fa. Hey, Roman numeral 7, babe, drop it like it's hot. If this world was mine, I'd take your dreams and make them multiply. If this world was mine, I'd take your enemies in front of God. Introduce them to that light, hit them strictly with that fire. This a vibe, do your dance, let them watch. She a fan, he a flop, they just wanna kumbaya, nah.
This world, concrete, flowers grow, heartaches, healing.
Some Kendrick Lamar here, who will be the Super Bowl halftime show in a few weeks. Cannot wait for that. Cannot wait for that. And joining Kendrick Lamar will be two teams playing in the Super Bowl. And who will it be? Now, I think the lines, obviously, I'm stating the obvious here. Vegas does a great job at setting the lines. Think about this week. How many games were just right on the line? The safety in the Kansas City game, what moved it to 9, and I think the line was 9.5 for Kansas City. Then not to mention, obviously the Detroit one was just off, but that no one saw that coming. And then on Sunday at 3, the Eagles game, what was the line? 6.5? 6? So that one was like a push right around the line. And then the way the game opened for a week ago for Buffalo and Baltimore, it was the Bills -1. They went by 2, but then obviously people bet it the other way, and Baltimore were the favorites by kickoff. But the way they opened these lines, they were pretty much dead on. Like three games were pushes pretty much. I think the line was 9, 9.5, 8.5, 9, depending on what. So that was, I think it opened at 9. So that was a push. The Rams game opened at -6. That was a push. And -1 for Buffalo. Or -1.5. So that was around a push. So they nailed three lines. Like perfectly, perfectly, perfectly. And then obviously the Detroit one was just a gong show. Absolute gong show. So this week, they have obviously the two home teams as the favorites. They have the Eagles as a favorite over Washington right now at -5.5. And the Chiefs are a favorite. It started at -1.5 for Kansas City, went up to -2.5 for Kansas City. Now it's down to -2. So I don't know where it'll be by kickoff. I assume it will hover around -1.5, -2. And I really like getting the 5 points with Washington. They're playing with house money. The real concern for Washington will be, how will Jaden Daniels play in these elements? He got to play in Tampa Bay in the wild card round, and then he got to play in a dome last week. So we'll see how he does in the elements. It's going to be interesting. That's a really tough game to pick. I think Philadelphia will win, but I like that 5.5. I think it'll be a very close game. Both teams know each other. To me, it's just Saquon Barkley. If he gets the ball 30 times, he's going to break at least one of them. That's my mentality. And then Buffalo, Kansas City. I've been saying this is Buffalo's year the whole time, and I'm sticking with it. Am I confident? No. But still, I think they're built well, and this is their best chance to get past Kansas City. It is. Eventually, Manning got past Brady. Eventually. So I believe eventually this Allen's going to get by Mahomes, and I think it's this year. I think it's this year. I could be wrong. Quickly, the national championship game tonight. We've been talking college ball the whole year. As a Notre Dame fan, am I nervous? Absolutely. Because Ohio State have five-star players everywhere. But if there's one thing I'm looking at as a Notre Dame fan that gives me some confidence is, A, our defense is fantastic and has kept us in games, and B, the last two games, we have not been the most talented team. Georgia's got way more five stars than us, and Penn State has way more five stars than us. Think about it. You can make an argument. Two of the best players in the draft coming up are Abdul Carter and the Warren kid, the tight end. Those are, and then those two running backs are going to be top picks in next year's draft. Penn State had five-star players everywhere. And Drew Aller, if he had a good game, was people saying, oh, come out, you'll be a top-five pick. So he's probably going to be a top-five pick next year. So the teams Notre Dame has played against in the last 2 weeks, or the two games, they've been far more talented. So it's, for me, it's not the talent, it's the game plan. Make Will Howard beat you, and can the corners hold up? Can they prevent Jeremiah Smith, Tate, and Buka from taking over the ball game? They do that, and they force Ohio State to run, which is our strength, stopping the run, then it'll be a closer game. My concern is Riley Leonard not turning the ball over. He can run great with the ball. I hope Jeremiah Love's more healthy. Price is a good running back. We got three good legs out of the backfield with the quarterback and the two running backs. The offensive line is going to be fine. The real question is, can Riley Leonard not turn the ball over, and can we stay ahead of those sticks? Because third and long, second and long is a recipe for disaster with Riley Leonard. He's not, I know he made some big throws against Penn State down the stretch, and that stunned me, but I have not seen it on a consistent basis. So Notre Dame, they're well coached. I think Freeman's a fantastic, fantastic coach. Hence why NFL teams, the Bears want him to interview. He's a fantastic coach. But the game plan from Notre Dame is make Ohio State run the ball, force them into running the ball, and Riley Leonard staying ahead of the sticks and not forcing the ball anywhere. That's the game plan. If your Ohio State is, let's go after their man coverage if they play man coverage and let the best player in the country, possibly, and Jeremiah Smith take the game over. And if they do that, we'll just go to our 2 and 3 receivers. And it's going to be on Will Howard. If Will Howard comes out fidgety and nervous, then Notre Dame has a chance. But if Will Howard's calm, collective, and he's patient and he finds his receivers, it's a tough matchup for Notre Dame. It really is. That's why I wanted Texas. I thought we matched up far better with Texas than Ohio State. But we got Ohio State. It's the Buckeyes and the Fighting Irish for the national championship. I cannot wait. I think it'll be closer than people think. Maybe I'm optimistic. I just think a Marcus Freeman team will stay in the game for a little bit. I don't see the blowout that everyone's expecting. I could be wrong. But I think they play good enough defense. They'll run the ball with the two backs, and they'll be fine. That's just my quick opinion on the game tonight. Should be a fun one from Atlanta. Cannot wait for that. Thank you guys for a great show. We're back next Monday where we will preview the Super Bowl. We are, 3 weeks away from the Super Bowl. So we will preview the Super Bowl and recap the championship games next week. I'm Tommy Lane. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you next week.